Welcome back to the second hour of It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. It's time for this week's in-depth interview with a special guest from the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Copeland.
Welcome. And if you're a regular listener, you know this is a two-hour show in which we try to explore whether we have more in common than divides us. In the first hour of the show, we ask questions that matter, avoiding politics, instead focusing on the issues that underlie politics and current events, issues that affect us all, young or old, locally and globally. In this, the second hour, we balance the creative with the intellectual by featuring in-depth interviews with local, national and international guests from the arts. The show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways we engage with the world. It's all a question of balance. And remember, if you'd like to find out more information about the show, you can go to the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. You can hear podcasts of all my past shows there, and you can connect with me on social media. Well, this week, as my special guest from the arts, I'm very pleased to have in the studio with me iconic photographer and photojournalist Bob Fitch. Bob's photo archives are a principal source for the iconic images of the peace, social justice and cultural movements of the last 60 years, including intimate photo documentary of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the Black Civil Rights Movement, Cesar Chavez and the United Farm Workers, Dorothy Day and the Catholic Workers, Joan Baez and David Harris and the Draft Resistance, Fathers Philip and Daniel Berrigan, Congressman Ronald V. Dellums and other participants in this vibrant period of history. Such is the quality and significance of Bob's work that in October 2013, Bob's images were acquired by Stanford University to establish the Bob Fitch Photographic Archive at the Stanford University Libraries. 5,000 of his most historic and iconic images will in time be available for free download and reproduction for non-commercial, personal and social justice movement use. Bob's photographs have also been featured in two Smithsonian travelling exhibits. Initially trained to be an engineer and Protestant minister, Bob says he was seduced by the compelling combination of visual aesthetics, potent communication, and storytelling of photojournalism, which enabled him to support the organizing for social justice that was transforming America, and in later years, local peace and justice actions in countries such as Brazil, Vietnam, and Sri Lanka. In addition, Bob has immersed himself in a variety of human services programs, including 2 decades of work with the California Department of Housing, developing affordable housing in rural communities, and founding, with April Burns, Carol Stansel, and Joe Williams, the Model California Central Coast GI Rights Counseling Team, which is currently associated with the Santa Cruz Resource Center for Nonviolence. In addition, Bob is an accomplished folk musician, songwriter, and rally song leader. Bob moved to Watsonville, California in 2008, where he manages his photo archives, and although affected by Parkinson's disease, remains active in community empowerment programs. Welcome to the show, Bob.
My Lord, to hear all of that, I wonder who that person is.
Well, you've all had a very interesting, long, productive life. It's very clear.
I've had the pleasure of a full life.
Yes, yeah, a very full life.
I think fullness is more satisfying than like eternal happiness.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. By fullness, do you mean a wide range of experience or a depth of experience?
Both.
Both, yeah.
And a passion for that experience.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you started your peace and justice work as a teenager in Berkeley. What fired up your desire for change at a time when a lot of teenagers are just thinking about school and sports and dating or whatever?
Well, first, I want to mention to your listeners, they may note that my voice is slow. And that is one of the symptoms of the Parkinson's that into which I'm growing now as a senior. I hope that's not a problem. I noticed that Diane Rehm on PBS speaks very slowly, and it gives her a kind of authority, elder authority. I hope that is conveyed to the audience.
Absolutely.
Well, back to the East Bay, where I grew up during my high school and later graduate college years. I think the key was folk music. Folk music was not concerts then. We met once a month in a circle in a private home. Maybe once a year, this tall, skinny kid with a banjo would come. It turned out that was Pete Seeger. Very informally, singing with people. Odetta. The home was, who is the elder woman who wasn't Faith Patrick? Wrote Little Houses, Little Boxes. I'll remember her
name
eventually.
Not helping you here.
But that music inspired me to an ethical perspective that was not part of my own home. I was raised in a very conservative home. Very little touching. You know, we touch each other now since the counterculture era. My father was a clergyman and professor of religious ethics. He had lists of what was right and wrong.
Oh, goodness.
And the atmosphere in that community was very different. There's a bigger world. People live in very harsh environments and situations, and I was drawn to that and decided to study it more in history classes in high school. So that was the key that drew me to a bigger world. Mostly Pete Seeger is a pivot in that. He's kind of the guru of that era.
Right.
For liberal gringos like myself. And Howard Zinn's book, The People's History of the United States, was a key.
That's interesting that art brought you, you know, into the social justice sort of awareness.
The music.
Yes, yeah.
Very much.
Yeah.
And my attitude, I remember going to an early concert in the small community theater at Berkeley High School, and Seeger singing, "How do I know my youth is all spent? My get up and go has gone up and went." And in spite of it all, I'm able to grin and think of the places my get-up has been. Now, I was 14, 15, 16, and today I'm saying to you, I think of the places my get-up has been and how rich my life has been because of that inspiration.
Well, you began your photography and writing career in the mid-1960s as a photographer for San Francisco's fledgling Glide Foundation Press. How did you come to be working there as you trained as an engineer and a Protestant minister?
Well, I was training to be a clergyman in the seminary. I chose the Pacific School of Religion in Berkeley for my graduate seminary work, because of their field work programs. And I worked in the mission. I worked in several prisons. I worked with different kinds of people and stretched and enhanced my counseling skills. And you asked about Glide. I kind of forgot your original.
I'm just wondering how you came to be working for them. You trained as an engineer. So
then Glide was one of those assignments
where I
volunteered.
Right.
And at that time, Glide was reforming. It was a former evangelical, huge downtown, inner-city evangelical church that was losing its congregation very rapidly.
Right.
And they brought in a team of three or four community organizers and eventually Cecil Williams, and realized their congregation was in the neighborhood.
Mm.
But it was a little different than formal Methodism. It was gay. It was street people. It was political people. It was poor, very, very poor people from the San Francisco Tenderloin.
Mm.
So the whole nature of ministry in the inner city grew and was changed. And one of the things they did was publish books, and they asked me to photograph for those books.
Mm.
They saw I had some talent.
So is that how you got into photography?
That's how I got started.
Just by being asked to do it. But you obviously had a camera. You'd obviously started taking photographs prior.
Well, the key to that, what drew me into photography was Baldwin's book. I read it one night. It's Fire Next Time.
Mm-hmm.
No more water like the flood. Next time it's going to be a fire. In that book, he describes with extraordinary feeling and lucidity the rage in Harlem.
Mm.
I remember reading that book in one shot, 3-4 hours at night.
Hmm.
At the end, putting it down in a daze and having a vision of myself being involved in some aesthetic pursuit that depicted what was in that book. So the next day, I thought about various mediums. Photography just jumped on my lap. I had done some before.
Mm.
I had some skills. Writing was too much work, which is kind of sad. But that book was the very pivot that drew me into photography.
Mm.
And the images contained in that book. The next time I saw that book was actually 3-4 years later when I was on a trip with Dr. Martin King. We were in his bedroom for a staff meeting, informal, after he woke up one morning. Everybody was in there, and he was working on his final book, Where Do We Go From Here? And Fire Next Time was among the volumes laid out on his bed he had been using for research to write his last book.
Oh, interesting. There's this kind of symmetry there with you having read it and coming around again to him having
yes.
it. Yeah, yeah. Well, if you just joined us, you're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Coplin, and my special guest from the arts this week, iconic photographer and photojournalist Bob Fitch. We'll be back after these messages.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Coplin? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Something
It's a Question of Balance music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made dessert in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest, photographer and photojournalist, Bob Fitch. And before we went to the break, we were talking about your experience with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So shortly after working for Glide in 1965, you became the staff photographer for the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, of which Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was president. I was wondering, I guess, how you got into that, but also what your remit was. You know, what did they want you to do as their staff photographer?
Well, I'm glad I shared the roots of my passion in the Baldwin book, Fire Next Time. So I was impassioned and felt that I could graphically and visually portray what I experienced reading that book. And I had brought speakers up from SCLC to the Bay Area, so I had a lot of friends in King's organization. And upon graduation from seminary, I asked, would you like a photographer down there for a while? Most photographers came and went in a matter of weeks. I said I could stay for a couple of years, and they were very happy with that. They brought me down, and Jose Williams depicted very nicely in the recent Selma film, sat me down and said, Bob, we're going to send you into the field. The national black press and media can neither afford nor risk sending their staff to get beat up, hurt, and killed. So we're going to send your white rear end, he used another word, out there, and every week you're going to mail them photos and stories like a wire service. That was the basic assignment, unfortunately, which started with several murders, lynchings without a crowd that were unfortunately gruesome, but continued. The killing we hear of today is still has the style of the lynching that was happening in after the Civil War up to the 1960s. There was something like 3,500 lynchings in the U.S. So murder was still happening. That evolved into what I call the After Selma work, the Selma March, which occurred just before I went to the South, helped generate a new series of voting rights acts and brought in federal registrars and monitors. So there was the huge process of recruiting people to vote, getting them registered to vote, making sure they went and voted, recruiting candidates, publicizing candidates, funding candidates. That entire process is the After Selma.
I'm wondering.
And I documented all of that basically.
Right.
All the way through the elections. And I was working with very ordinary people in the rural communities of Georgia and Alabama.
I'm wondering if you met any resistance from the white community, being a white photojournalist in such a racially charged environment.
Well, it is my hypothesis that after the intensity of Selma was generated by the murder of several white people in that region, that the Alabama government was backing off and telling its local sheriffs and people, don't bring in the crowd anymore. No more whites are going to get beaten or murdered. So I was harassed a lot. But I never experienced the violent brutality that had previously and currently was happening to Afro-American people. I bumped up to against some risk situations.
I imagine also, I mean, that parts of the black community must have been very grateful to you for documenting it, but also if they didn't know who you were, that there could also be an aspect of them not wanting you around. Was there, you know, was it difficult to get these photographs?
Well, you can imagine how many doors it would open when someone would say, what are you doing here? You look like a cop. And I would say, I'm Dr. King's photographer.
Yeah.
That opened doors and closed some doors on the part of whites.
But generally, yes.
Generally, I have some guidelines generally about working in environments, cross-cultural environments, that are ironically applicable today in our hugely pluralistic society. For instance, how do what I would call normal Latino families deal with a gay or lesbian person? Now, that can be a difficult boundary. So there are always boundaries. It's a matter of building trust to get around. The matter of fact, that's the key word. The key word to organizing or getting close or being intimate in any situation is trust. This is a big job for any artist or documentarian. Trust.
Yeah. Photojournalism is more than just a record of events. Certainly images speak to us in a way that words don't, but it seems to me it's more than just the visual. A good photograph captures an energy of a moment or a person that conveys something beyond the image. I'm wondering if that's something you would agree with.
Well, that's well said. We have a local photographer here in this region, Shmuel Thaler, who has consistently the knack of the great photojournalist Cartier-Bresson, who helped me and others see and bring into our own work the momentary sense of an event, which involves many factors, principally what I call the dance, the movement of the body, the brow, the touch between people, the body movements in the group that direct one's eye to a person or an event, the movement between two or three or within a group of people, and particularly their arms and their shoulders, their legs.
That's interesting.
The other lines that may be in an image, a flag or a flagpole, and the horizon, etc. The whole dance visually.
Right, yeah. So there's sort of a conscious element of trying to structure the image of the composition of the image of what you're seeing. But then there's also that sense of trying to capture the energy of a moment, whether it's a wonderful moment or a tragic or difficult moment.
Well, Bresson was an existentialist. He was part of that crowd that survived World War II and felt very hopeless and had tossed out religion and found the meaning of life in the moments of life. And he was looking for those moments.
Interesting.
That would never be repeated again. Famous photo of a man walking through water puddle. And his foot is about to touch the water, and you know when it touches the water, a big circle will be performed. But the photo is just before the heel of that man is to touch the water. He had a knack for that, and it always kept me alert to the moments that draw one's heart in. What's the little prince? Seeing is with the heart.
I love The Little Prince. Wonderful book. Yeah. So this show is a lot about balance and balancing the left and right brain, the intellectual, the creative, the intuitive. And it seems to me that in the field, what you're doing is a balance of that, that you're very quickly, in a moment, balancing the composition of the image, taking in the structural elements, but then also just feeling into a moment, like you're saying about the heel nearly touching the puddle, the moment in a situation that will capture something that will speak to people.
Well, it's apparent that the word balance is very important to you. You've developed a whole philosophy around it and a radio program.
It is, but it's not an artificial thing. It's not like I think we should, you know, be...
No, you thought about it.
Yeah.
And you feel it personally. I don't feel it as a balance. I feel it as more of a magnetic pull.
Interesting.
There are moments that literally draw my heart right out of my chest. And I don't give a darn if that happens, if I explode, I stick with it. It may even be dangerous. But aesthetically or physically, to me, that's what an icon is. A photograph can be a depiction, a record, but an icon, people look at it, you know, ancient icons, they felt more like that. What do we have for icons these days? One's heart is drawn out of one's body. And it's not balanced at all. It's almost painful.
Yeah.
Cartier-Bresson saw as many photos like that. I have about a dozen.
I'm sure you have more than that. But well, you think a dozen?
That have that quality. So my photograph of King in his office with Gandhi's image on the wall behind him became the model for the National Monument. And the particular stance in some ways is very parochial. But I've talked to kids about, what do you think of this man? And they see the strength, the accessibility, his connection with the Gandhian photo on the wall on nonviolence. There's a certain kind of accessibility and power in that dance of his stance, in that image, that makes it more than just a snapshot. It draws people to it, and it draws out their heart.
Well, I think that, you know, the best aspects of all art, that is what happens, is it takes part of you into the artwork, and it gives you something intangible back. And so I think that's what you're saying. You felt that moment, and then by capturing it, you can share it with others. Others can vicariously experience that moment and have their hearts pulled as well. Yeah.
Let's rest with that thought.
Well, if you just joined us, you're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Coplin, and my special guest this week, photographer and photojournalist Bob Fitch. We're going to go to some messages now, but we'll be back very soon. I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore, and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
Practicing yoga opens us up to clear stuck energy and feel better.
Spiritually savvy yoga clothes enhance this natural exercise process further by imbuing the body with spiritual symbology and geometry through clothing with consciousness.
Check out spiritually-savvy.com.
Individualize your yoga pants and tops by choosing a design from the wide range on the website and find wall art and window art to match. That way, the energy of the symbol you choose can radiate throughout your practice space.
Visit the website to choose a design for your yoga clothes, wall, and window art today. Spiritually-savvy.com. That's spiritually-savvy.com.
Welcome back to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest, photographer and photojournalist, Bob Fitch. Well, before the break, we were talking about how to capture that perfect image that also conveys the energy of a moment that pulls at your heart as well as records a moment. And art historically has been used, particularly images, whether they be painted or photographs, to evince social change. And I was wondering, Bob, whether you feel that art has advantages in conveying a social justice message that perhaps other approaches don't, like a straight political approach or whatever.
Well, you know, my work, I was a propagandist. I believed in a cause. I wanted to tell people who were not there the story of what was happening. And I wanted them to be attracted to that story and to take action on behalf of the resolution of the injustice. So that may sound kind of crude, but I was a storyteller with a biased objective. So I was studying in other photographs what grabs people. And fortunately, I had an intuitive knack for identifying within my psyche and body so I could coordinate my finger click with what I was seeing and the necessary technology, which is considerable.
All your photography is around social justice issues. You obviously have a passion for that. Do you feel that that passion has helped your work to be the quality that it is?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, when that is not part of the content, I can't photograph. I photograph junk.
That's interesting. Really?
Really. I've tried to do commercial work and I can't do it. I can't get my heart into it.
Right.
And it's a bump to the heart that makes something not just a documentary snapshot, but an icon that other people almost worship.
You also, for 7 years, documented the organizing efforts of Cesar Chavez and the United Farm Workers Union. I'm wondering what drew you to that cause.
Dr. King was a pivotal experience. After he was murdered, and the family invited me to document the funeral for them, I came home and was camping one night with a workshop of people around. They were having a workshop around discrimination. I went outside and sat on a log, and Dr. King, who is dead, reappeared to me. Now, I don't believe in those things, but it happened. And he stood there, and in his deep voice he always used, he said, "Bob, continue the work." And then he wasn't there. The next morning, I got to thinking about the other nonviolent movements and leaders in the domestic U.S. whose lives and safety and health were being threatened and not documented. It was a huge gap. And I made a list, tried to think of photographers who might do that documentation. No one I knew had the time or the inclination, so I just started. So there is a historic period through there of who are the majors? Chavez, Seeger, Baez, Harris, the draft resistance. More recently, it's been the campaign of Luis Alejo in our assembly district. And a few years back, the march from Tijuana to San Francisco, Guerrera, Azteca, Fernando Suarez del Solar, whose son was as a military murdered in Iraq. So I've just kept making the list and stayed on the task.
Well, if Dr. Martin Luther King tells you to, then you pretty much have to, I would think.
Pardon?
If Dr. Martin Luther King tells you to continue the work, then you pretty much have to.
Yeah, well, I go back to my own passion again.
Yeah.
My own passion was telling me, continue the work.
Yeah. I understand the Chavez stamp issued by the U.S. Post Office in 2002 is a rendering of one of your photos. How did that feel to have your work honored in that way?
Well, it is among, like I say, a dozen images that has become an icon. And not only was I honored, and in that case, paid. I was dishonored a little bit because they took out the background, which was a farm worker flag put in a field. During the Bush years, there was not going to be any Union flag on a stamp.
Wow.
So, but it was done. But the great honor was that stamp was reproduced in many, on many flags and banners, beside which or under whose visual presence I marched.
Wow.
So I was literally following my own icon.
That's
now
great.
That's an honor.
Yeah. Yeah, that is amazing. Your image is also have been acquired by Stanford University to establish the Bob Fitch Photographic Archive at the Stanford University Libraries. What does that mean to you to have your art archived in that way?
Well, first of all, it's a huge surprise.
Really?
Well, as I told you, I was just a working propagandist. There was even a time when I tried to have my photographs in exhibits and people would not take them because photojournalism is not considered an art. So I'm very pleased, particularly that they would mount images and make high quality files available on the web for free download. So the photos can now be used personally or for continuing justice work by the children and grandchildren of our next generation. They're already doing this. I get requests every week from grandkids of people who are in photos.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's very, very exciting. Stanford was willing to engage that task. And I think the curator there, Roberto Trujillo, and Ben Stone, the two primary curators, had a sense of two things. First was the diversity of my work. The second was the diverse content of my work. I've not only photographed the leadership, but also the workers.
Mm.
So when you go through my material, you find out about how it was done and who did it, and that the scaffold of justice is built not by the leaders, but by the workers.
Mm. Yeah, that's an interesting point to make, because as you say, you often see, you know, pictures of famous, you know, characters in historical periods, but to have that, but also the context of the huge swell of people supporting that, that's really important.
Well, I think often of Tom Gilmore, who was finally elected sheriff in Utah, Alabama, who still visits. I think of Elle Fonda, 106 years old, registering to vote for the first time in his life. And my sweetheart and I were invited to a family reunion where there were now 200 registered voters in his heritage. Or Septima Clark, who taught literacy programs and went to a Highlander folk training school with Rosa Parks and Dr. King, and was one of what I call the second level trainers who brought thousands of people into the civil rights struggle. So those people are as important in my work as the leadership.
I know you've said that you've been involved in all of this through a passion for social justice, for what speaks from your heart of how you want to help justice to come about. You must feel a satisfaction in your part in the improvement in civil rights in the areas that you've documented.
It's ambivalent. Two things stand out. Bigotry is not just laws. It's a matter of the heart. It's going to take centuries to heal the pluralism that is now forming around our globe. There has been virtually no shift or change in the economy of capitalism or communism. There's still massive groups of poor within either governmental structure. And now we're faced with climate. I believe Dr. King and some others were sensitive enough to consider that as an issue of justice, because damaged climate impacts the poor people first.
Yes.
So is that ambivalence of knowing now an Afro-American person at night can walk safely down the street of their own hometown in Alabama versus it's still very, they may have access now, but can they afford access economically?
Right.
That's not changed.
No. I mean, I think it's the same with all these areas. There's always work to be done, isn't there? There's always growth. No
you
matter.
You mean like continue the work?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I believe in continuous growth on a personal level. I think all through our lives we should be trying to grow and evolve our consciousness. And I think out in the world, that's what you see as well, is a continuous, well, what we want to see is a continuous growth. Because if you're looking for something to be completely solved, I think that can be paralyzing, and that's what stops a lot of people acting. Oh, well, that can never change. That can never change. Or it can never change enough, quickly enough, or whatever, and so you do nothing. So I think it's important to know that it is a journey. All of these things are a journey, but it's worth being on that journey. Would you agree?
I would be very glad to be minus the journey to economic equity.
Yes.
And so that journey, I quit it for victory in a snap.
Yes.
So...
Yeah. I think what I'm trying to say is that although these things still exist and we still have challenges, that the huge leaps forward that we have made and that you have helped contribute to are worth celebrating, definitely, even though there's the work continues.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think your images and what you've been able to stir in people's hearts has really brought those movements further forward in the world than they were before. And that, in my mind, would be what contributes to your full life, your sense of having lived a full life, a meaningful life.
Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. I think that you have created some amazing art that will stand the test of time, but you've also presented people with a means of access into... an era of events that most people were not involved in, and yet through your work, they can get a sense of what that meant to be there at that time.
Well, if I can tell the story with potency, and if young people can share that and move on with new work, I will be most satisfied. And to hear the word art now, it's kind of fun. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for taking the time to come and talk to me today.